Welcome to the third episode of the Hard Questions Only podcast. I've had a little bit of difficulty getting these out on a regular schedule. I was initially intending on making them every Sunday, but these days either an entire Saturday or an entire Sunday is consumed by my training for an ultra marathon. So I just have to put a little more effort into my time management. And perhaps I should stop saying this, because I don't know that it's ever not going to be the case, but it seems to have been quite the eventful week in the world, or in the States. A lot of stuff going on. The Hunter Biden story suddenly being a story after the election, suddenly now it's not taboo to talk about, and that's been something to see for sure, especially when I watched the believe it was the Post that initially broke the story, and their Twitter getting suspended and everyone calling it fake news, CNN calling it Russian disinformation, and all of these wild things, just trying their level best to sweep that shit under the rug. And then what do you know, as soon as Biden probably won, it's now a story, which I don't know who doesn't see right through that. Most Republicans probably saw right through that from the moment it happened, and now there's probably a lot of Democrats who are like, what the hell was that? You know, and perhaps the fear is probably that some Democrats, and you know, a non-negligible number of them, would think twice about voting for Biden had they been well aware of that issue. So, hence the impetus for sweeping it under the rug until after the election. But, like, that's not fooling anybody, I don't think. And as far as what happens to Biden or Hunter Biden, probably nothing. The conspiracy theorist in me says, well, the FBI will probably make some type of deal with Biden, and you know, in exchange for favorable policy or you know, oversight or something like that, where they're like, he promises to stay off their backs for the next 4 years and leave them alone, and they'll look the other way or find some stupid excuse to write it all off. I don't know, but it's 2020. I think we all know that if you're wealthy enough and influential enough, punishment doesn't happen. That's not a thing. The Texas versus Pennsylvania suit, I think that is basically over now. From what I understand, obviously I'm not a lawyer. From what I understand, the Supreme Court turned it down, not because Texas didn't have a good argument, but because it had something to do with the Supreme Court not having jurisdiction, or like they didn't take it up with a lower court first or something to that effect. I'm not sure, but it was messy as hell. And that whole effort of these lawsuits on the part of a bunch of people, they look like people trying to throw things at the wall in the hopes of something sticking. Like the gentleman, I believe is a congressman who started that lawsuit, you know, wasn't started until after the fact. So if people are so, by after the fact, I mean after the election, talking about how it was unconstitutional for Pennsylvania to change their voting laws without changing their state constitution, which, okay, fine, that's probably technically true. But if people, especially Republicans, if they were so concerned about Democrats trying to screw with the election, they should have been hawks about the process from day one. They should have been scouring the stuff, filling holes like this, prior to the election. But they weren't. Before the weekend's events happened, or I guess that was Friday, there was some Texas GOP leader kind of insinuating that people should consider secession to some degree or another, which I thought was wild, and it seemed a little bit crazy given what's going on. But it's funny right now because both sides are basically saying the same thing. Republicans are saying Democrats played dirty and, you know, they stole the election. And the other side is saying we won fair and square. Fuck you guys. This is, you know, you're trying to make a coup out of this. And this, I think there's a lot of people getting red-pilled left and right over all of this. But secession seems like a bit much given the circumstances. And I don't think that's the first time Texas has, like, toyed with that idea. Even if it's just, you know, a marketing type thing. I don't know how serious they could possibly be about it, but... And then, of course, there were some Democrats who were like, it's illegal to secede, and that would, you know, by definition, cause civil war. And it's like, well, okay, just because things are illegal doesn't mean they're necessarily immoral and don't make sense. I mean, that's... Not doing something because it's illegal is not always a good reason for not doing something, especially when it's the right thing. I'm not saying that secession is the right thing right now, but generally speaking, arguing legality versus illegality is not great. Not a great argument to make. And there was a interesting Washington Post opinion that I haven't gotten around to read yet, but the title was "Ideology is All That's Left of Conservatism." I don't usually make a point to read these opinion pieces just because I like to look at the titles and think about them for myself. But that was an interesting take, I think, that ideology is all that's left of conservatism. Because I would say a lot of what's going on right now is always like retaliatory and in reply to what the other side is doing. Republicans are doing stuff because the Democrats did something, and now it's, I don't want to call it revenge, but like it's a back and forth. No one is starting from square one and say, hey, we want to get this stuff done, at least as far as I can tell. You know, that's probably just because it's election season and it's been a damn messy one, so people aren't really about like original ideas right now. They're just You know, participating in the power grab, so to speak. But I could see someone making that argument. You know, there's a lot of argument about whether or not the GOP actually likes Trump, and the fact that Trump has maybe become kind of a cult of personality. It seems like no matter what he has ever said, people are going to cheer for it. Even those arguably pretty memorable ones, like when he said in reference to John McCain, about the fact that he was a prisoner of war, and he's like, I like the guys who don't get captured and stuff like that. Like, just really tasteless, just shitty comments. You know, I know there's a lot of people who voted for Trump in 16 and 20 who are voting strictly on policy, who either don't care what he's like as a person or actively dislike how he is as a person. But like, at the end of the day, he's still said no shortage of shitty things. And, you know, that's, you know, in my book, that's plenty of reason to not like someone and to not vote for them. Even though, you know, policy is wins the day, ultimately, it's, I don't know, I would never hold that against someone for not voting for Trump because he's an ass. And maybe I'm that person, I don't know. I don't think so. I'm pretty set in my libertarian ways. But California has gone back into varying degrees of lockdown. That's been really crazy to see all this very, like, uneven enforcement of the rules. And some industries are getting cut some slack, and some have really been cracked down on. Like, I think restaurants can no longer serve indoors, which is going to kill a lot of places. And I think people are getting, you know, they're at their wits' end and the end of their patience with these lockdowns, especially in these really left-leaning states like New York and California. And I think not very long from now, people are going to say, no, fuck that. Like, we're not closing down. It's not, this virus and this illness, as terrible as it is, no one wants grandma to die, but it's not worth all of us slowly dying, and you know, in our own ways, economically, you know, financially, their businesses. It's just, it's terrible all around. I think, pretty sure it was Thomas Sowell who said, during times like this, there's no solutions, just trade-offs. You know, that's unfortunately the case, but like, you can't just stick people in their houses and not, you know, give them any kind of financial reprieve or otherwise. That's just fucked, in my opinion. That's not right. It's not a good thing to do. And I think right now, the last I heard, they're talking about a stimulus bill, but it didn't include any money for individuals, or if it did, it was a much smaller amount than it was last time, like $300 or something. Either way, nothing meaningful going to individual people, which I think is, again, playing a large part in red-pilling people. They see these billions and billions of dollars going to corporations, like a lot of these airlines who got bailed out, and then they immediately laid off tens of thousands of people. Meanwhile, you know, Joe the plumber only gets $12,000 one time. Like, that's a slap in the face to the average American. I don't know about riots and protests, but I think there will be people flat out refusing to lock down. I'm sure there have been onesies and twosies here and there, but I think it will become a common thing as people become more emboldened and they see other people doing it. And they're going to, you know, there's going to be strength in numbers, basically. People are going to feel, you know, more courageous to do it when they see other people showing courage and doing it as well. And then I guess that was Saturday. There was, or perhaps yesterday, I can't remember. Today's Monday, the 14th, by the way. All of these, I don't even know if you'd call them protests. Maybe they started out as a protest and then it turned into riots between Proud Boys and Black Lives Matter and Antifa in D.C. And that was pretty wild to see. That was pretty harrowing, and I was pretty certain someone was going to get shot or, you know, fatally injured. I don't know if that ever happened. I hope not. I don't think so that I saw, but that was wild. And it just, on all sides of that, it just looked messy as hell. I saw a whole lot of Proud Boys calling people faggots. I guess that's their favorite word. I don't know. Been literally showing their asses. Like, there were a group of Proud Boys wearing yellow and black plaid kilts, and they paused for a photo op, and they all lifted up their kilts, and they didn't seem to be wearing underwear, and across their ass cheeks was written "fuck Antifa." Like, I don't know what that's supposed to serve. I don't even think it's like not even a good joke. I don't think anyone was laughing at that other than, you know, their fellow Proud Boys. And like, to be honest, I'm not super clear on like the Proud Boys platform. I don't know if they're like nationalist or like white supremacist, or like they're skirting that line, or they're just, you know, hard right or what. I don't know, but they seem like a bunch of idiots. They seemed like they were just out to start a fight, and maybe they were. Maybe Antifa was the same thing. They were just out to start a fight. But I spent, you know, several hours Saturday night watching footage from a couple reporters in D.C., and like, it all just looked messy as hell, and people are just, they want to take swings at each other, and it's not productive at all. It doesn't do anything. You know, if you want to go out there and protest, yeah, that's great. Everyone should protest, and, you know, make politicians aware that, like, you know, you're wise to their game and you're not about it anymore. But just going out there to brawl is, if anything, it's going to take, well, it might lend credence to your movement, you know, in circles that basically agree with you. But for everyone else, they're going to be like, what the hell are you doing, dude? Like, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make me want to, like, lend sympathy to your organization and your movement. That's just dumb. And speaking of BLM, I guess they requested an audience with Biden and Harris shortly after shortly after, I guess, Biden basically won, and they got no response, and then they tweeted about it, and no response, and that made me want to kind of laugh in, like, a sad, dark way, because I think I and probably most people saw that coming, or most, you know, centrists or right-of-center people saw that coming, that, like, you know, they probably expended a lot of effort campaigning for Biden and Harris, and Biden and Harris only acted like they cared about Black Lives Matter, the organization, and maybe also just Black Lives in general, you know, while they were trying to curry favor with these people and get votes. And as soon as I got in, they were like, nah, fuck you, don't care about you anymore. And I think that's going to make a lot of BLM people real salty, and justifiably so, I think. You know, they're trying to play the game, you know, the right way. They advocated, they were successful in getting in what they believed to be their candidate, but ended up not being their candidate. And I think most people are not surprised, unfortunately. So what becomes of that? I don't know, but that was, it seemed like BLM was playing checkers, and the Democratic Party is playing chess, and I think maybe it lends a little bit of a credence to the theory that, like, the Democratic Party never super-duper cared about Black people and other minorities, at least not for the last 20 or 30 years, really. And that it's only comes up when it's election time. I mean, you can look at Google Trends for Black Lives Matter, and it's only around elections. Although, I understand that's a small sample size, because we only have 16 and 20 to look at. But it's there, and it's a very, very stark difference. And you can even look at their rhetoric, like, during election season and campaign season and after the fact. Like, it dies down as quickly as it bubbled up. It's very, very obvious. So, sucks for them, I guess. And I can't help but wonder if they're gonna, I doubt, form a third party, but start putting forward their own candidates in the future for local and state level elections, so that they can get their voice heard, you know, more clearly. You know, that's totally their right. I mean, they're trying to play the game just like everyone else, but I just think they're on the outside and the establishment's on the inside, and they're very closely guard the gate. But America in 6 months is going to be, that's a really, really hard prediction to make. I think a lot of it is going to come down to, I think it's going to probably be bad either way. Because either things are going to stay the same with the election, and all the Trump people and other Republicans are going to feel like it was stolen from them, although no one has put forth hard evidence, as far as I can tell. And even though they won, Democrats are going to be salty and maybe even more wary about Republicans, because I feel like they tried to, you know, have a coup. I hate using the word coup, because this isn't like, you know, Latin America, and there aren't, you know, there's not dictators in the street, but I guess it depends on who you ask. But, like, all this, I feel like I'm always brought back to this point, which is that these elections are undoubtedly really high consequence. People put a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of time into helping ensure that their party gets in. And that's, one, so that they can do the things that they want to do, and two, which is perhaps most importantly, they want to ensure that the other party doesn't do things to them that they don't want. So, for example, Republicans want other Republicans in office so they can do Republican shit. You know, put more money towards the military. I don't know, all the generic Republican stuff. But they also want to make sure that Republicans get in rather than Democrats, so that they can keep their guns and they don't have to be afraid that Democrats are going to take their guns away. You know, that goes both directions. So it's it's really high consequence. There's always a lot at stake, especially when one party or another controls both houses of Congress or one of them and the presidency. That tips the scales pretty considerably, and that makes it pretty likely that they can get some stuff through that the other party is probably really doesn't like. And it always goes back to the question of whether or not all of that implies that maybe the government and perhaps especially the president have too much power. Although, I mean, you can obviously make that argument, you know, pretty well. But I think people will always, rather than minimizing the power of the government, they will just continue to play dirty and do everything they can so that they get that power rather than nobody. And they're willing to take the chance that the other party may get it, which, you know, makes things messy as hell. Just like we have with all of this election stuff. People are fighting tooth and nail in both directions, and people are spending 24 hours a day on CNN talking about it, even though very little happens on a day-to-day basis. But America, six months from now, I think if nothing else, will be more divided. Primarily because of the election. I think the Republican-Democrat divide will get a lot bigger. I think there will be a lot of people switching from one side to the other in the wake of all of this, like Hunter Biden stuff, the election stuff, people getting red-pilled, realizing things definitely aren't what they seem, and stepping back and really questioning what's going on here. And also with lockdowns and the unconstitutionality regarding that, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who suddenly realize that the government is not looking out for Joe the Plumber's best interest, is not number one, two, or three on their docket for any day ever. And if that means people start treating politicians more like accountable humans and less like celebrities, then good. I'm here for that 100%. Because I'm really tired of people like AOC being idolized, Trump being idolized. I'm over it. They're people. They make mistakes. The fact that they're politicians and they want power over other people should already be something you should consider, because I don't think that's necessarily a normal thing. My anti-authoritarian colors are showing a little bit, but I don't think that opinion is totally unwarranted. I think today was the first American vaccination for coronavirus, which is ostensibly good. You know, like I said in the previous episode, I really hope that this vaccine is good. I understand that it's, at least one of them is like a fundamentally new type of vaccine that's never been done before. And of course, it was made extremely fast. And I really, really hope bad things don't come of that. But I'll probably find out one way or the other, because I'll be at the bottom of the list to get it. Because I'm a healthy, middle-aged, am I middle-aged? 29, probably not. Young, relatively young person. I hope that goes well and we can get back to normal, because I refuse to let this become the new normal. I can't do that. This, I'm going to lose my mind, and so is everyone else in this country. This is not normal. I don't like it. I want to get back to business. You know, it has been kind of annoying and, like, really petty watching this Jill Biden stuff play out, Dr. Jill Biden. I guess someone wrote an op-ed, I don't know, or an opinion article in somewhere, I don't know. I don't know if that was the Post or what, talking about how she should drop the doctor from her name because she hasn't delivered a child. Which is weird, and it's just, on its face, seems silly. I don't understand why anyone would care so much, unless she's giving, unless she's, you know, using it to pose as a doctor and give people medical advice, which I haven't seen. Maybe that's the case, but somehow I doubt it. But it's also, like, exceedingly insulting to anyone else who's ever gotten a PhD or, you know, similar versions, like JDs and whatnot, PharmDs, etc. Like, why would you care? Like, that's a very difficult thing to earn. And, you know, you should wear it proudly. My mother-in-law has a doctorate. My wife is in the middle of getting her doctorates. Like, I don't know why you would... That just seems like such a petty thing. And then, of course, Twitter erupts over it in both directions. All of the Republicans and right-leaning people I follow are now, like, sarcastically putting their degrees in their names, like James Lindsay, comma, BDE, which I'm not sure what that is, comma, respect my degree. Although he does have a PhD in math. John Posobiec says Officer John M. Posobiec, the 3rd USN IWC. There's a couple other ones. But, like, even if you're Republican and you are annoyed by how much stink people made in response to it, like, grow the fuck up, man. Like, this type of petty shit is why there are more libertarians and more people just opting out every day, it seems like. Tired of pundits snapping at each other, thinking that they're clever, not advancing any idea or policy or provoking thought or encouraging discussion. It's just little light punches 1,000 times a day back and forth. It annoys the piss out of me. But I think I'm going to call the episode there. If you've made it this far, thank you so much for listening. You can expect another episode perhaps this weekend or next Monday. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in reaching out on Twitter, I'm at Leibniz was first. LEIBNIZ was first. Or my website, thomashedgman.com. See you next time.